Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, we are giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm joined by my co-host, Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And we are welcoming author Alexandra Kennington. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me.
Alexandra Kennington writes fantasy and science fiction books. Her debut novel, Blood Beneath the Snow, is out from Ace Books in spring 2025. She lives in Utah with her spouse and toddler. Oh, the toddler age. When she's not writing, you'll find her reading an enemies to lovers book, watching Star Wars, big fan, or giving writing advice on her social media platforms. I'm not in the toddler stage, and I can honestly say I do not miss it.
It's rough sometimes.
It is rough. So rough. So before we talk Gods Beneath the Ice, which is book two of your duology, we're going to get to know you a little bit. So what initially drew you to the fantasy romance genre as a writer?
I grew up on fantasy. I loved reading fantasy books as a kid. And I was one of those kids who was like reading a book under the desk at school, trying to get away with it. I just had no interest in anything that was actually applicable to life skills or whatnot. But yeah, I just was a voracious reader. And so when I eventually decided that I wanted to try my hand at writing, I was still a kid. And so I was mostly just like writing stuff that was repackaged versions of things that I already read, because those were the stories that I knew that were familiar to me. And then as I like gained the skill to actually like put a story together, like I just had so much love for fantasy that I really wanted to stay there. And then the romance came a little bit later. When I was reading YA fantasy books, I just remember always being like, I wish there was more kissing in this book. Like the fantasy and romance is just, I want more romance. And so when romantasy got big, I was absolutely thrilled. And so I love that people are now embracing more romance with their fantasy in a lot of ways. So I really just wanted to kind of settle into that place that felt familiar and also was what I had wanted to read as both as a kid and as an adult, the kind of books that I tend to gravitate towards.
So book one of this duology was your debut novel, but clearly you've been writing for a while. But what made you decide to publish this duet?
So Blood Beneath the Snow was the first book that I actually wrote from start to finish. Like it had a beginning and a middle and an end.
Okay.
It was not very good when I finished it. And so I rewrote it from scratch, I think 5 different times before it was like, okay, this makes sense. Like it's workable. I can do something with it. And really like at that point, I felt like it had grown so much that I don't know. I mean, I'm attached to every story I write, but these the characters that when they came to me, it was like, okay, yeah, this might be it. Like, I think I have come up with something that feels special and that feels like it could really make a mark and break through all the difficult things that come with trying to get a book published. And it was just a story that I really believed in. And then I was also just way too stubborn to let it go, I think is part of it too. So
did you always plan on it being a duology, or was it just like one big book and then you kind of split it from there, or?
So I wrote the first book, and when you pursue traditional publishing, the common advice is to not like get set in stone what you want it to be, because often your agent will want edits and then your editor will want edits. So if you've already written like a second or third book, then you might have to just rewrite the whole thing based on how you edit book one. And so when I was offered the deal, they offered for 2 books, and it was kind of like, okay, so I have 2 books to like finish up the story. And I liked where I had ended book one. I had kind of ideas of where I wanted book two to go, but I hadn't sat down and like, okay, this is exactly how it's going to go. So that gave me enough wiggle room to like make sure that the second book kind of rounded out the story. I think in my mind, it was a trilogy, but I think a lot of that came from just the fact that up until recently, I feel like trilogies were kind of the norm in fantasy spaces. Like I hadn't read very many duologies by the time that I was even like getting my deal, which happened in 2024. Like even then, I feel like duologies were just kind of becoming a thing.
Yeah, it definitely, it's either like one giant tome or multiple, like 3 to 4 books.
Yes,
Yeah.
the giant tome is not for me, I don't think. They're just, oh, I get to the end and I'm like, I don't ever want to touch that again. Like, I'm ready
I think the
to move
duology
on.
is like the perfect length for
Yes.
fantasy when you're getting into this because you're getting that whole first, like, what's going to happen? And then you wrap it up in like the second book. And I love how that works out for romantic fantasy.
Me too. I'm a bigger fan of it than I necessarily thought I would be. I think
Yeah.
because I was so used to the trilogy like pacing of things, but I've really been liking like picking up more duologies lately.
Well, but you figure Star Wars is all trilogy, so it kind of
Yeah.
like Lord of the Rings is a trilogy. Like it all gets you.
True.
Like all
Yeah.
those like basic like nerd like things.
Yes.
Like there's a lot of trilogy in nerd life.
It's true. It's true. It feels really natural too, I think, because like the three act structure within an individual book, it's easy to
Yeah.
like just kind of blow that up for the whole series and say like, okay, beginning, middle, end. So having to end in like the actual middle can sometimes feel tricky, I think, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and it's like where's a good place to end where it's like not so like dire that like people don't want to come back, but it's like dire enough that they like are really hooked in.
Yeah, exactly.
So, can you share any writing rituals or habits that you have to stay focused?
Ooh, I don't have a ton that I can think of. I think my biggest one is just that I try to make sure I'm writing most days. I'm not going to say every day because that's just not going to happen, but I like doing it. Like, I like touching the story often enough that I don't lose momentum, because if I leave for too long, then it feels like a slog to try and drag myself back to it. But once I get the ball rolling, it like that little obsessive part of me can really dig into it and just like keep going until I've actually gotten to the end. I feel like that's the momentum. Without it, I just can put a project aside and never come back to it so easily.
Well, like you put it down, you forget about it, like the other things come in. So you said you rewrote book one quite a few times, but on the initial writing of it, did you have it planned out? Did you know exactly where it was going to go, or did the characters kind of speak to you as it went and you pants the book?
So I am very much a plotter.
Okay.
I like knowing exactly where I'm going with the book, and I feel like just sitting and taking the time to plot helps me get to know the characters a little bit even before they're on the page. I will say they do always surprise me in some way or another. At some point, I always end up like chucking the outline and just saying, okay, like, but even having planned it one way, I think is often enough of like a guide rail to help me when it does inevitably get thrown out. Like, okay, yeah, maybe they're not doing XYZ, but I still know that I want them to end up here, like by this point in the book. And so how do I guide them back to that? Or it's often too, like I'll get to a point and I'm thinking about the next point they're going to, and it's like, oh, I just thought of a better way to do that that feels more true to the characters and the story. And so, like, it's often that the characters surprise me by enhancing what I've already come up with instead of like necessarily making me scrap it per se.
Right. Well, so
Yeah.
you like you plot, but you pants as you go as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So how for you did you balance the story element? Because we'll get to the world that you created, but how did you balance the story element of the novel and the duology with the romantic relationship?
Ooh. That's a good question. And I feel like everybody has such a different preference for how much of each they like in a story. I really loved the world and the relationships and wanted to do like almost a 50-50 split. For me, I think a lot of the characters kind of informed the world building itself. I like was building the relationships, and I started with Revna. I kind of knew a little bit about her situation and her not having magic and like the trials that her family puts on. And so then the questions became like, okay, well, if the trials are going to look like this, then what would the world have to look like in order to like create a society that would do these things? And so like the winter brutal kind of setting of it really came from that. And then balancing it with the romance, I don't know, like for a long time, I did not know what to do with the Hellbringer in like early drafts, but I knew that he had to be there and that I wanted him to like have his own emotional arc that he was going through. And so it wasn't until I was like, okay, I'm gonna see what happens, like if he kidnaps her and they are just like isolated for a little bit. And then it was like, okay, this feels good. And it felt like it gave them enough space to like grow together as characters while also like staying within the fact that they live in this politically brutal world in a lot of different ways. I don't know if that actually answers your question or if it was
No, it
just random.
does.
Okay.
The kidnapping works like so well. I started reading book one and I was like, yes, he kidnaps
I mean,
her. I was like,
we do like a good kidnapping.
we are big fans of the kidnapping.
It's a good
So
trope. It's a good trope.
it
It
is.
really is. So Gods Beneath the Ice, which is book one of the Blood and Souls duology, comes out February 17th, 2026. It is romantic fantasy. So my thing is, book one is single point of view. Like you just get Revna's point of view, but book two, like you adapt to that, and we have Soren and Revna. What made you make the decision to change that?
So that one kind of surprised me a little bit. I intended for it to be Revna's point of view. And then I was thinking, oh, maybe like the prologue could be Soren. Like that could be kind of fun. And as I built out the story, so much of book two is them like trying to put all these puzzle pieces together and figure out like the what really has happened in their history and like what's happening now and how that's affecting them. And I was realizing that Revna had some of the pieces, but then Soren had a bunch of the pieces too. And I wanted him to be like more involved with sharing his own pieces of the story. Like I don't know, Revna can always ask him about it and he can like tell it to her, but it became clear to me at some point that just like, okay, he has a story also that is part of this, and the whole book overall works better if they are both telling the story as opposed to just her. Like it felt like without him there was something missing, like a crucial element of it. And so that was when I decided, okay, yeah, I think that this would be a good thing for the readers to know. Like I kind of knew what was happening to Soren behind the scenes, even if Revna was there with him. And there were points that I was like, okay, the reader needs to be seeing this, but Revna's not there. So it will have to be from Soren's point of view, kind of a thing.
Well, and as I was reading it, because like book two opens up in Soren's point of view, and it is very much more impactful because you get like his reasoning behind some of the decisions he's made and like why like he is where he is and his journey of like saving his sister and things like that. And I do agree. I think that had you not given us those insights to his like hierarchy, essentially, like in the story, I don't think it would have made it would have it wouldn't have made sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, it feels almost like, I mean, it feels like they're kind of on two separate journeys a little bit in this book too. So I don't think it would have worked as well for either of them if you didn't have both. Like, yeah. So it worked really well. Like I was very excited when I opened book two and I saw his POV. I was like, oh,
Well, and I
yay.
think part of it too, though, is because book one, like, we don't really know him. Like, he's just kind of this, like, he's the kidnapper. He's this, the Hellbringer. He, like, we don't know him. And then when we get, when she realizes who he is, like, that whole, like, scenario, it kind of changes the scope of the story in a lot of ways, but in a good way.
And it works for the conflict really well too, because you think he's just this person who's working for his queen, doing her bidding, but there's so many more layers to it and who he is. And he's basically like, he's like three different people all in one. He has to live these different personas just to get through life, which gives it a much deeper layer too. So
Yeah, it was really fun to dig into him and get to know him better, I think, in book two also. I really enjoyed that part of writing it a lot.
What was the inspiration for the creation of the world in like the way in which the groupings are set?
Yeah, so I started with, I knew that, a fantasy world has to have certain elements, right? And I kind I knew I didn't want them to have like modern technology or anything. And but the world, I think more than anything, kind of felt like a cardboard cutout of an actual world for several drafts before I went in and was like, okay, this needs some bulking up, some actual things to like set it apart. And that was kind of where the snowy setting came from, was I was reading a lot and I was like, that felt a little bit unique, and it felt like something that would add to the story and the character relationships, and it felt like it could be symbolic in different ways too. And so I started weaving that in, and the more I built it around the idea of, like people with magic, people without magic, and kind of how would society see that in the place where Redna lives. But then there's also other countries. So I started thinking, okay, well, do they all have the same set of beliefs about these people with or without magic? Or how would conflict happen if they didn't have those same beliefs? And I heard a tip at a writing conference once that was like, if you come up with a world first before your characters, then a good way to figure out who you're writing about is to ask, if everything's perfect, who's suffering? Like, who's not having a good time in that world? And so I knew that part of Revna's story was that her world and her society as a whole had kind of wronged her in some ways. And so a lot of it was built up from that, I think.
I just it was intricate, but not in the same time. And I really enjoyed the way in which you created the world, because that is one thing. Like, I'm not a big romantasy reader. I read them, and Amanda tells me which ones to read. She is our romantasy expert. But that's one of the things I
Not
really
that
enjoy
expert,
about
but
these stories. Well, you're our expert. That's one of the things I like about these stories, is the intricate worlds and just how different every romantasy world is, in like the little pieces, and even just the magic itself, it manifests differently in so many different ways. And I think it's just so fascinating.
that's a lot
Yeah,
of fun.
we're big, like, if the magic is like interesting. And to Leah's point, she said, it was intricate, but not, but I think it was intricate, but not overwhelming, because you
Yes,
have to,
that was the word I was looking for.
okay, yeah.
You have to have, your readers be able to like understand it. You don't want it to be so complicated that they're like, wait, what is happening? But I think it was done in such a way that it was really fascinating. Did you know what the magic was, like what Ravna's magic was going to be when you started out, like, since she doesn't have it originally?
Yes, I did kind of start with like a little bit of that inkling of like of what the end of book one was going to be. And then as everybody else's magic started coming to me, I was like, okay, I need some way to like organize this. Because if every single person has a different power, then I'm getting stressed out. I can't remember all of that. And so I was building the religion kind of around the same time, and that was when I thought, okay, I think I could kind of group a lot of these powers together, like based on what these gods are like represent to these people. And so that was kind of where it had started, and then from there it was nice. I left myself some room to like change the powers a little bit, give them some variation. And so that also I think made it kind of fun, because then things could affect people in different ways, and but you could still have you could have different people with similar or the same abilities. And so I think that helped with, I don't know, I'm not gonna say like ease of plotting, but I think I kept myself from writing myself into more plot holes that way. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, but I think that's one of the nice things about like the romanticism and being able to do what you want. Like, you have like similar people with similar like powers, but it's like their makeup like changes it, and it's the complexity of like the magic that allows like everybody to like manifest in a different way. But it's not complex at the same time, which.
Yes.
And I just, but I enjoyed the fact that like Revna is like this, she's part of like the royal family essentially, but is the outcast because she doesn't have magic in book one. And so like she is not necessarily like revered in any way as like her brothers are.
Yeah, that was a fun, complicated family relationship to write. I really liked kind of playing around with that. And I thought it was interesting, just, she's really a person who doesn't fit because she is the only royal without magic. But then in kind of the communities without magic, everyone else is being so poorly mistreated that, as a royal, she kind of still has that privilege. And so it leaves us feeling a little bit unmoored and uncertain of who she is or like what she could be for her people until the story kind of kicks into gear. So, yeah.
Well, but she herself has some really strong feelings about the way
That's true.
things are happening, and she is not happy with the way things are happening, and so she is making choices to change things. And a lot of that plays out in book one, and book two is like the result of these things that she wants to change. And it sounds like we're being super vague, and we kind of are, but it's one of those ones you just really need to read it to really experience like the I feel like book two is the result, like the consequences of her actions for all of book one.
Yeah, and I feel like in book two, it's magic doesn't solve her problems.
No,
Like,
not at all.
it's if anything, it makes it harder. And I really enjoyed how we got to see her deal with that or not deal with it in certain instances, and
Yeah.
just like it was still really hard for her. And like it made me just like root for her even more. I was just like, I was mad at everybody else. I was like, can't you see how hard this is for her? Like sitting here screaming at the book, and I'm like, leave her alone, but without spoiling anything. So,
Talking around it.
yeah. So,
That's one of the hard things about these spotlights is you don't want to spoil anything, but like there's some really good moments in the story that you really want to talk about, but you're like, if I talk about it, then people will know, and so then I can't talk about it. Because there's something that happens at the end of book two, and I'm like, how is this gonna happen? And how is this gonna work out? And then it does, and it makes sense. And I'm like, oh, I really like what she did there. Because then something else happens, and I'm like, oh, I like how that happened too.
The backstory of the magic is really interesting, and I was really curious how that was gonna play out. Because I was like, well, like how do these powers come about? Like, what does this mean? Because they both end up with, I mean, Hellbringer Soren already has it, but Revna also ends up with like a pretty brutal type of magic. And I'm just kind of like, I'm like, how is this gonna work? But it's like the explanation, the things we find out, the past history that we don't know in book one, it really like lays everything out in a really nice way.
Thank you.
It's one of these stories that there's similarities to other books that I've read, but it stands out on its own with the way that you created it. And that is one thing that I just really enjoyed about both the stories is you could see elements of other like worlds that I have read, but at the same time, like it is completely different in like the hierarchy and the royal relationships and all those things. Like it's vastly different at the same time. And I just really enjoyed that style.
Thank you. I don't know. That's definitely what I was going for. So it's always nice to hear that that's what people are picking up from it also. So thank you.
You're welcome. So, what is next for you?
So up next this fall, I have another romantic book coming out. It's the new series, so not in the same world or anything, but it's called Drown the Bones, and it's coming from Berkeley XO. That's their new books. So yeah, I'm really excited about it. And it's about the spare heir to the throne who is just very devout, and then her twin brother is murdered. But when the church calls off the investigation into his murder, she decides that she's going to find the killer and bring them to justice, however she has to. Even if that means using heathen magic and betraying her goddess, and even allying with the ghost of her rival nation's prince.
Ooh. I
So,
mean, you had Amanda and I at Spare Air.
Yes, you did.
So,
You did.
because if you were watching, we both made a face and we're like, oh, no,
Love that.
that sounds good. I do love a Spare Air, especially, I mean, I especially if there's like murder involved and like they become the heir because of that and like the whole like process of like, because there's like, troublesome things afoot when that happens.
But lots
Yes.
of political intrigue.
Well,
So
I
we are
am
here for it.
intrigued. Yes, we
Yes.
are very much here for it. But you need, like everybody listening, you need to go read both these books in the duology. You will not be disappointed. It is quite an adventure.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Alexandra, for joining us on this author spotlight.
Thank you so much for having me. I had such a great time chatting with you guys.
Well, we appreciate it. These, like I said, these interviews are some of my favorite things to do for the podcast because we just, every author has a different like way to get from point A to point B, but the end result is always the same. And I think it's just fascinating. And
Definitely.
then, so, but thank you, everybody. And until next time, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.